Today's podcast is brought to you by Something Blue by Anita Kay, specializing in wedding and event photography. Visit her page on Facebook. For those in love, capture those memories with Something Blue by Anita Kay.
This is Unbridled Enthusiasm Podcast with Mark Poulos.
So fuck you and fuck your baby and fuck your wife.
Why fuck them all?
Does he have headphones? We're recording at a barbecue gas station.
We're not pausing this to put a baby in there. So you can just stop it right.
You're half drunk and high and trying to read a map.
First off, all right, here we go.
We're on the edge of the Grand Canyon.
That's my whole job when I'm on the road is protecting my butt.
Stoner!
And the fat man.
He says, man, you really need to turn your life around.
Fuck you, Mark. Mark Poulos, everybody!
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Unbridled Enthusiasm Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Poulos, as always. Good to be back. This is another installment of The Ride Home. This week I worked in Hartford, Connecticut at the Funny Bone with Mark Curry. And if you don't know Mark Curry, he was the star of the hit sitcom Hanging with Mr. Cooper. And I feel horrible admitting this, but I did not see one episode of Hanging with Mr. Cooper. And I don't know. I mean, there's so many comics that are touring right now that I run into that got their claim to fame and their celebrity in the 80s doing some kind of, you know, horrible sitcom. And truthfully, I can't say whether Hanging with Mr. Cooper was horrible or great because I never saw it. But I can say this. Mark Curry is a very nice guy. He does a lot of, let's say, extracurricular activities. His room is above mine, and I think I've been high for 3 or 4 days. It's ridiculous. But he's just one of those guys where he toes the line of never being off, you know? And sometimes that's a little annoying, you know, because you try to have like a serious conversation about the business or just life in general and stuff, and it always just devolves into, you know, a one-liner contest. But some of my favorite moments of the week were sitting in the green room between shows and just, you know, chatting about comedy. And one of the times he was flipping through the channels and there was some really old movie on from like the 70s. And it was a film about a bunch of nuns. It was called, I think, Runner Stumbles or something like that. But the funniest part about how I figured out what the name was is one of the actors, he goes, "Hey, that's the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz." And I was like, really? So I Googled who the Scarecrow was, and then I pulled up his IMDb, and I got his name, and then I Googled his name plus nun movie, and it came up, Runner Stumbles. And it was just a really weird-ass movie. And he's just doing, like, running commentary of the film, like Mystery Science Theater 2000, you know? He's just like, "Oh, man, look, that one nun, she's pregnant by that priest. I know it. Look at her face. She's all horned up." And I'm like, I don't think this is the storyline of this film. And he's like, "You can tell. Look at her. She's getting crazy." But, he's just a really cool guy. And he had this thing he would do at the end of his show where he would bring people that were having a birthday or an anniversary or some kind of celebration, and he would bring them on stage, and then he would like talk to them and joke around with them, and then they would have to dance with him to get off stage. So the sound guy would play some kind of, you know, club music, whatever, some Jason Guetta or Ludacris or something. They'd have to dance and leave. And sometimes it was really funny because, you know, nobody knew what was going on. He would just say, if you're having a birthday or a celebration, come on stage and we can hang out. They didn't realize they were going to have to dance. So sometimes, like, older people would go up there, like old dudes and older ladies and stuff. And that's when it got funny, because he'd make the old dudes and the old ladies dance. And, of course, they would either dance really silly or they would dance really good, and it would always be funny, you know. Like, there was... I kept wondering, like, throughout the week if some of these people were plants. Because a couple times he brought ladies up there, and he's trying to get them to dance, and it turns out that they're ministers. And then at the end of it, he'd give them the microphone and be like, all right, heal us. And then they would do, like, a sermon, and people would go crazy. But it's just so weird, because this week... I got hired to do something that I usually don't ever get hired to do, and that's I got hired for two jobs. So usually when I come out and I do these funny bone things, it's usually either I'm featuring the whole week where I'm going in the middle, or I'll do a split week where I'll feature most of the week and I'll headline a couple of the off nights. But this week was really strange because they hired me to not only be the feature, but I was also the MC. So I had to do two jobs every night. I had to start the show, do all the announcements, do my half an hour set, bring Mark Curry up, and then go back up at the end and close the show. It was like, it was a lot of making sure I was in the right place at the right time this week. It was a little hectic, but I made a little bit more money than I would have, so it's all good. But man, this has been a long week, I'll tell you that. I tried to find a plane ticket out here, and to fly in Thursday morning and fly out Monday morning, it was like $600. But to fly in Wednesday night and leave Monday night, it was like $350. So I booked that. I'm like, that's no big deal. But then, you know, I left my house at like 3:30 or 4:30 on Wednesday. And I'm not going to get back there until like 11 o'clock tonight. It's just a really long week. I miss my ladies. Miss my daughter and my wife. They're nice ladies. And my daughter's starting to really start babbling now and getting close to some words and stuff. So it's really funny to be around her, because she'll come up and she'll start saying stuff. And it's obvious, I can't understand what she's saying, but it's obviously she's saying something. And it would be funny to have just like some kind of baby, you know, translator, you know, where she comes over and she's like, and then it translates, listen, you fat bastard, go get me some goldfish crackers. It'd be funny if that's what she was saying. But oh gosh, I should tell you about this too. Last week, my daughter's birthday's coming up in a month or two, and one of the big presents that we wanted to get her for her birthday this year was a playhouse for the backyard. And we started looking at them, and it was surprising to us that like some of the playhouses were like, they're just plastic playhouses from like Fisher Price for like a couple $100. And I'm like, for a plastic playhouse? And then there was another one that was only like maybe $50 more expensive than the plastic ones, that was actually like a cedar, like wood playhouse that looked kick ass. And it had like working shutters and like a chalkboard and a like a little bench, and like inside it had like a cooking station and shutters, and I mean it was like amazing. So my mom actually decided to get it for her birthday, and so I was trying to get it put together before I left on this trip last week, and oh my God, man, it's still unfinished, let's say that. There was 29 steps to put this playhouse together, and some of the steps had sub-steps, like step 17 had four parts to it, and I'm like, this is just insane. I mean, there was a couple times, like, I was putting it together, I just thought to myself, why did we even buy this? Like, I could have gone to Menards and bought a bunch of wood and wood screws and just made a house, you know, because that's what it felt like. I mean, it was crazy the amount of pieces that this thing came in, but once I actually get it finished, it's going to look freaking sweet, and since it's cedar, it's probably going to last for hopefully a long ass time. If that thing breaks down really quick, I'm going to drive over to whatever factory or company built this cedar house and shove it up their ass. Like, how do you like some cedar up your ass? That's what you do, you know. You build playhouses for your kids because they deserve it, because they're tiny babies. But I got put up in a hotel out here in Connecticut, and the hotel's about 6 blocks from the club, and that's the only thing I don't like about flying into a gig. Like, I don't know how many times people talk to me about this. They're like, so do you fly everywhere to do your comedy? And it's like, not really. I mean, I'm not an idiot. Like, I don't just fly off the handle every week and be like, I'm driving everywhere. Like, I'm going to drive to California and back. You know, it's like, I used to be that way when I first started in comedy. Like, whatever gig I would get, I was always going to drive to it. Like, I never even thought about flying anywhere because I just love driving. And people are like, how can you love driving? It's like, there's millions of people that love driving, you know. They just like, I don't know what it is. I just like being on the road and just driving and kind of seeing things I've never seen before. Maybe stopping in cities I've never been at before. You know, it's like when you fly someplace, it's the same bullshit every time. You know, you take a $60 taxi to the airport. You get out, you know, you swipe your credit card, you hand some guy your suitcase, you have to take your shoes and your pants off and go through security, and then you have to sit around and catch up on your Netflix for an hour until you get on a really cramped plane with like 180 people. And, you know, people are like, it's so convenient. It is, you know. I mean, obviously, every time I book a flight someplace and I get on it and 2 hours later I'm at my destination, I'm always like, well, that was really easy. But then it's all the other shit. You know, when I get off the plane, now I have to wait for somebody to get me. And then I have to wait for somebody to get me to my hotel. And then while I'm at the hotel, I'm limited in where I can go. I can only go to places that are within walking distance. And when I go to the grocery that's like a couple blocks away, I have to make decisions on what I'm going to buy as far as like how many bags I'm going to have walking the 6 blocks back to the hotel, if it's going to be too much or too heavy or whatever, you know. And it's just, I just like the freedom of having my car when I go places. And I truly just love driving on the road, you know. And people are always like, God, I can't believe you do all that driving, you know. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I have made some concessions now with being a father and a husband. Like, if it makes more sense time-wise and money-wise to fly someplace, I'll fly just because it makes sense, you know. But if I run the numbers, if I'm working in, like, you know, Detroit, which is, like, an 11-hour drive back and forth, and, like, gas-wise, that's going to cost, like, you know, $80 maybe. And a flight from Minneapolis to Detroit is, like, $300. It's, like, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I'll be saving a shit ton of time, but I'm also blowing a lot of money that I could have for the family, so I run those numbers every time that I get a gig now, and obviously it's like a 19-hour drive to Hartford and back. And surprisingly, with my car, that was only going to be something like $220 in gas. But with it being a 19-hour drive, I'd have to get a hotel on both sides of it, which would add another $60. Plus all the meal. Anyways, the difference between the plane ticket and driving was like $40 or $50. So I just decided to fly in. And I'm glad I did. It's just, you know, that's another thing about flying is, like, you know, you're at the whim of the airlines, you know. You could get to the airport and they could tell you, like, you know, we don't have a plane, so you're going to have to wait 9 more hours to get home, or, you know, this big storm came in and shut the entire airport, so you won't be going home for a week, you know. It's like that kind of stuff is what scares me the most, because it's like, if I have my car, I don't know how many times I've gotten up and, like, checking out of a hotel, and people are like, where are you going? I'm like, well, I gotta get home. And they're like, but it's a blizzard outside. And I'm like, yeah, it wouldn't be the first time that I've driven through a blizzard. You know, it's like you can get anywhere if you drive slow enough and you drive safe enough. You know, I think there's only been 2 times in my entire 15-year career that going slow enough and careful enough just wasn't good enough because it was that bad. And I just had to get off the highway and get a hotel and wait for it to pass. That's 2 times in 15 years. And the truth is, it's like, with technology now on your phones, I just look at my Weather Center app and I see where the storm is and where it isn't. And I try to figure out a route around it, you know. I just think people are kind of idiots nowadays because they're like, you know, I have to get from Kansas City to Minneapolis, and that's Highway 35. And there's a giant snowstorm on Highway 35, but that's the way I got to go, so I guess I'll go straight through it. It's like, are you out of your fucking mind? Because you got to figure out those numbers too. It's like, if you go straight through it, it's going to take you forever to get through a blizzard. But why not go 29 to 80 to 169? And now you're going behind the storm and you have a better chance of getting home, you know? So people don't think about that stuff, you know? It's like those people that, like, there's some kind of accident on the highway and they just sit there waiting for the one road that they know to clear so they can go home. Instead, I'm just a different type of person. Like, if I come up on that kind of shit, I just get off the highway. I'm just off. Turn on the GPS, look at my phone, figure out another way. There's always another way. That's why there's side highways and county roads. You can get around it. You know? I've got an app on my phone that shows me the blockages and the traffic, road closures, all that shit. You can go around it. Don't just sit in it. Why would you sit in it? And it just drives me insane, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like I got off on a tangent there. Anyways, to wrap up, Connecticut was awesome, man. It's kind of funny, but I haven't been back here in 7 years. I met my wife in May of 2008, and my first time ever coming to Hartford, Connecticut, which was the first time 7 years ago, was Thanksgiving weekend 2008. And my wife came with me. They didn't do a show on Thanksgiving, so we actually we drove to Hartford. And then on Thanksgiving, we drove down to Dobbs Ferry and spent Thanksgiving with my sister and their family. And it was just really cool. And came back up here and did the rest of the shows and then drove home. It was, you know, a special trip. You know, it's kind of tough being back here without her. But, you know, she's home and taking care of the baby and got her new amazing job. So it's bittersweet. But I'm looking forward to coming back here again. And Mark Curry was a good guy. So if you see that he's on the schedule at a comedy club near you, I'd go see Mark Curry because very nice guy, very funny. I mean, he did some shit on stage that just, it's really hard nowadays if you're like one of these sitcom actor comedians to make me laugh because it kind of all feels like the same shit and not that funny, but he had some shit that was making my stomach hurt. I was laughing so hard. So I would go out and see him. He got a standing ovation last night, and it was completely warranted. He did a 90-minute set that just blew the windows out of that place. So check him out if you get a chance. But, yeah, you can get this podcast at Podbean or iTunes. Check out largedrunkman.com for my new tour dates. They've been updated, and yeah, so tune in next time when we talk about who knows.